Setting up shop.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Setting Up Shop, your favorite podcast about setting up a shop, starting a small business, or just listening to lovely, like-minded people talking about their maker journey. I'm Dan from Tarrants.co.uk, a woodturner in the UK, and with me, as always, the lovely Heidi, a potter from the United States.
Hello.
And Rasmus, a blacksmith from Norway.
Hello.
So this week, we are going to talk about AI. Hopefully that doesn't make you turn off the episode. We're not going to rant about AI. We're not going to champion AI. We're just going to talk about ways in which we've used it, some of the benefits, some of the negatives, and maybe a few tips and tricks on how to use things effectively. Maybe flag up some AI things that you're not sure about. So we'll get started with that. One of the first things I'm going to bring up, which we didn't discuss in the pre-show, and some people may not be aware of, I actually used an AI Excel formula generator
what?
The other day. Oh. So if you are not like me, you kind of use Excel in your small business. It's good for working out your margins and all of that kind of stuff when you're making stuff. But you're not quite sure on your formulas. Like, you've got a vague idea that it needs to be a sum of this and whatever else. There is, through ChatGPT, if you look at explore other AIs, and there are probably other variants of this, there is one specifically for Excel formulas. And you can tell it, I am trying to do this to this and this, and it will generate a formula for you, which you can then test. And if it doesn't give the number that you think is close to being right, you can refine your prompt. And it will eventually, after a couple of iterations, give you the correct formula with all the necessary number of brackets and asterisks and all the rest of it to solve the problem for you.
Hmm.
I'm in love with ChatGPT.
So, you know, it does help. I'm not going to lie. It does help if you've got a very basic level of understanding of the terminology used by Excel, such as sum and ceiling and all of that kind of stuff. But I certainly have found this helpful for those kind of, I know sort of what I need it to do, but I'm not quite sure how to write the formula type thing.
Hmm.
So that's a more mundane thing, but potentially saves an awful lot of head scratching and stress in some of the mundane tasks as well. What do we mean by AI? We are talking about computer generated data, I suppose, assistants and tasks that can be helped, whether that's generating an image, generating an Excel formula, generating text, just generating information. That is a huge area now that things are moving into. It is rapidly changing. It's rapidly improving. And I know all three of us use it in very different ways. But let's start with a very simple one. Let's talk about text, first of all. And I know, Rasmus, you've used AI for this quite a few ways. Do you want to start with a simple example and we'll go from there? And we'll talk about, you know, a positive, and then we can talk about pitfalls afterwards.
Yeah, I really like using AI to do a lot of very tedious things. One of them is just something as simple as, oh, I have this series of information, I need it reformatted. One is like, it's in a spreadsheet, I need to take this number followed by something, by quantity, and measurements and all of that, and have that written out so it's easy to understand and easy to read, instead of just plain numbers after each other that gets confusing. And it's very easy then to tell AI that, oh, take first number, add this, second number, add this. And then suddenly you have like a cleanly written list that you can follow. Nice and simple. It's not that it's groundbreaking, but writing the prompt and just cutting, pasting, and waiting for ChatGPT or something else to do that for me probably saves me 10 minutes, depending on the list. Yeah. That feels kind of good.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, whichever AI you use, it can be a very useful tool. I mean, we mentioned beforehand potentially about checking for spelling and grammar.
Mm-hmm.
Most sort of writing programs have kind of got that built in, so it's not necessarily great for that. However, if you suddenly factor in, particularly in Rasmus's case, a translation from one language to the other, where you might be a bit hazy on the grammar or spelling of some of the words, it can be exceptionally useful for that. So for instance, when I went out last January to Norway, I sent Rasmus my price list and a whole like wholesale thing. And he did a direct translation from all of the English into Norwegian. And I can guarantee you, he didn't sit there and individually write down each specific line translated into Norwegian from my my catalog.
I think I did actually.
No, wait.
Yeah, no, not for a price list. I did for like the briefs and things. I did run a lot of it through AI, but when it was like the sentence here or something like that, it was more like, oh yeah, I immediately know how to do this or get a feel across. But when it came to translating your bio, I think specifically, and the list of product names, I was like, I run it through AI, it gives me a starting point, and then I go in and I correct things. They're like, that doesn't sound right in Norwegian. I would prefer probably this name over that name and things like that.
Yeah.
But I actually, honestly, I've forgotten that I did that.
Yeah. Well, it's the kind of thing, though. I mean, it might not be applicable to that many people, but for those of you who live in parts of the world where having dual language descriptions or things like that might be helpful, or if you're really, really kind of, for whatever reason, wanting to do it, like your website, you know, if you wanted to make absolutely sure that there was a language translation that didn't just rely on Google, that might get the feeling or the sense of your descriptions wrong, there is a way that you could do that and dual up your website.
On that note, I have used AI a fair bit to check the tone of my email when I'm communicating specifically in English, because there's a certain amount of business language that I don't have for English, or sort of the etiquette of how you communicate in business language.
It's called sarcasm normally, Rasmus. It's a direct translation. Business English is a wonderful thing. It's basically, how do I write I don't care, or I hate you, or just go away as politely as possible? Or this could have been a phone call or an email rather than a 2-hour long Zoom meeting or whatever. But yes, that is definitely a thing. There's definitely a tonal shift and a change that would happen from one language to another.
The biggest problem for me there is not quote unquote learning how you do it in England. It is the fact that the hierarchy systems between Norway and England is so different. Like here in Norway, I can basically talk to my nan and kids down the block and the leader of a business in the same tone, and no one will take offense. But if I were to talk to a child and a British CEO or something in the same tone of voice, that would seem really weird, either for both of them or one.
It probably depends on who you are, but I understand what you're getting at. I mean, there's the other side to this as well, moving on, where you've started doing business with Germany as well. And you mentioned the other day that you've been using AI to help you have conversations basically with Germans on, say, Facebook Marketplace or other auction sites or whatever.
So I was saving that maybe for later. Not sure why, but no. So because of my obsession with anvils and blacksmithing tools, needing more of them to resell and all of that, I've had the need to communicate with people abroad a fair bit more. And yeah, Google Translate to some extent is fine. I have friends speaking a fair amount of languages. If I ask them kindly, they can help translate some things and make sure tone is right. But when it comes to having a conversation and for it to flow and seem kind of natural, I gambled on using ChatGPT, and I learned enough about German when I lived in Japan, which is a really fun sentence. And it's true, but just enough to sort of figure out that this seems to be correct. Not enough to verify anything, but it's more like I don't think I'm getting utter garbage from ChatGPT. So I was like, okay, cool, I can try this. Maybe in the beginning I verified things with Google Translate and cross-examine things a little bit more. But then in the end, I was basically just cut and paste and writing things in Norwegian into ChatGPT. And I would have like this weird conversation in ChatGPT where it will sort of, I would just fill in half German, half Norwegian, and it will give me the opposite every single time. And that way I could talk and I can discuss things and communicate with people in Germany and the Netherlands and, I dare to say, in Sweden.
I think it definitely has the opportunity to open up markets and open up interactions a lot more, as long as everyone's aware that, you know, that is what's happening, and that you're not, well, first of all, you're not the robot, that you are utilizing a tool in order to be able to communicate in their native language. I think from a business perspective, it's good to understand that. Absolutely. What about yourself then, Heidi? From a point of view of text kind of things, what have you found it useful for or not useful?
Ideating has been really helpful, like coming up with naming convention for something, or coming up with just a quick phrase, a turn of phrase for marketing or that kind of thing. I'm pretty lyrical as a person anyway, so it's not really something that like is necessary for me. But sometimes if I'm just in need of a prompt or something to like kick off an idea session, like it's helpful to just kind of hop on and start throwing out like, these are the 4 points that I want to make. It's Christmas. I have an abundance of this X item and I need just like a quick 2-line marketing copy that I can put with this image. Because sometimes you're just tired, right? Sometimes you're just like, I don't even want to think right now. Can you just tell me what I should say and I'll say it? And that's exactly what you get.
Yeah.
But sometimes it works. Sometimes it like just gets you just enough there that you just tweak it a little bit and you're like, yeah, that's
good.
It's just a cheat code for life.
It's definitely the way that I find it. I mean, I particularly have used it in the past for product descriptions where there's nothing worse than staring at a blank space that you know you need to fill. And like, obviously I've made the product. I know what it is, but I also know that I waffle even in text as well as speaking. So I don't want to overshare everything and not actually get the information in the right place. So I have at times written like a 10 or 12 line prompt or longer to try and really refine the tone, the content, the feeling, the type of language I want to write it in and all that kind of thing. And I'll use that and then copy that prompt and then just change the name of the product or the dimensions or what the function of the product is. And like you said, Heidi, it's one of those things where the result might not be specifically what you want, but it's a long way into, right, I've got 4 paragraphs where I'm going to ditch 2 of them, or I'll use half of this one, half of that one, put those together, change the words here. And all of a sudden you've got a couple of hundred, maybe, you know, 400 words, depending on however much you want it to be.
I liken it to having a silent partner in a way where it's like we're so used to working solo that especially if you're in your studio by yourself or you're sitting at your computer by yourself and you're trying to come up with whatever you need to come up with for your business and there's no one to bounce ideas off of.
Yeah.
Whereas like in my day job, I've got an entire committee of people that will like put up on the whiteboard all of the different names that we want for a new product. And it's a group effort. Whereas when you're a solopreneur, there's no group, it's just you. So having that tool available to like be a sounding board to kind of be that whiteboard opportunity is it's game changing.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And like you say, you can almost kind of, well, I mean, you mentioned earlier, you use audio AI a lot more. So as in you talk to your AI and ask it questions. Whereas I'm much more of a type it into a thing. I don't have an Alexa or an audio device of any description or even, you know, you probably can get an app on the phone, but I don't do that. It's not my thing. It's very much I want to write into it and read the response. But I can totally empathize with the wanting to bounce the ideas off and getting a different tone or a different perspective on things.
One fun thing you can do with AI is to not only have it generate arguments against your proposition. Like if you have an idea of, oh, I want to do this thing, I want to try this thing, then you can have ChatGPT to give you arguments for why that might not be a good idea, either for you or for your business and things like that. On top of that, if you have then already primed your AI with information about yourself, a bit about how you prefer to communicate, like the style and depth of information and things like that, the language, like if you want it, in my case, to be British or American.
Yeah.
And also like saying like, oh, so I'm this kind of person. I run this kind of small business. I live in this country. And suddenly AI automatically has a hell of a lot of context to give you arguments back. But then you can also then fire back at the AI and say like, oh, but I still think it is a good idea. Give me arguments for doing this. And you can have the AI argue for you back and forth. And you can suddenly have a long list of reasons for why you should or shouldn't do things.
That's a really interesting use. I hadn't considered it like that. You're almost setting apart the analytical side of your brain on a problem and just kind of saying, right, you guys deal with that. That will knock out a load of the things I'd possibly already considered or whatever else. But it will also flag up things you might have forgotten or might have not considered in the first place. That's a really interesting use of that. I might have to consider that in the future. And my wife, when you're listening to this, remind me that I've said that. Because I'll have forgotten.
Mm.
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because there's an awful lot of negativity around certain AIs, and an awful lot of, in the nicest possible way and the correct use of the word, ignorance around AI, and by which I mean a lack of understanding of how a tool is to be used. And as we know, I am not the most technologically adept. I'm always hesitant. I really need it explaining to me in crayon how to use things. But once I get into something, I'm like, oh, okay, I know how to do the one thing. So then let's gradually explore from there. And as Raz has just said, you know, that's not using a different tool. That's just asking a different question.
Mm.
And anyone who's had some form of mentorship or kind of a business, I've forgotten the other one, what's it? It's mentoring, and I can't remember the other word for it. It's not counseling, but it begins with that kind of a thing. But anyway, when they are helping you build your business or with leadership or something like that, an awful lot of the time, they will just keep asking questions. They won't give you answers. They'll just keep saying, okay, but why do you think that?
Mm.
Okay, so what impact is that going to have on this? Okay, but what's that going to do with this? And so you're in effect replacing that with an AI, potentially not even consciously using that in that way. But that's I think, a valuable way of doing it, as long as you remember, as we all do, that at the end of the day, anything that happens is your decision. But on the flip side, as Heidi mentioned in the pre-chat, if it goes wrong, you get to blame a computer and no one's hurt or upset. You can shout and scream at it as much as you like, and you're not offending an actual person. It's fine. But I'm going to regret that in the eventual uprising.
We'll be dead before then. that's somebody else's problem.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've mentioned a few times about the technical term for the what you write into the AI and ask it is called a prompt. I will go out on a limb now and say that there are a huge amount of people on social media and YouTube and things like that who tell you how to write a good prompt using various different AIs. And I would suggest it's worth checking out the age of the video, because AI is constantly changing and very, very rapidly. But learning how to write a prompt well will make a huge difference to the result that you get. So I would suggest, and I think we're going to put a link into at least one, if not a couple, into the bottom of this podcast description. So these are not sponsored. We're not sponsored by them. We don't sponsor them. These are just ones that we think are not bad. but it would be worth watching those videos on recommendations on how to write a good prompt, because that is a topic in its own. And it's a lot easier if you can physically see the words on the screen as examples, rather than us trying to describe it over a predominantly audio format. Moving on then, where do you guys land on the whole image generation with AI? Is this something you use? We'll start with you first, Heidi. Is this something you use? And if so, how do you use it? And are there things that you won't use?
This is a delicate topic, obviously, because of the industry that I'm in. So if you aren't aware, I'm in packaging graphics, and I've been in print for, 20 plus years. It is something that's made its way into my world on a daily basis. We've got marketing managers that are using it to come up with their briefs. Like historically, they couldn't even draw a stick figure. And now they're able to like give us a better tool to communicate what the inspiration behind, whatever initiative they're trying to do. So they're able to communicate that a lot better. But that has its downsides, obviously, that you lose that opportunity to kind of build something from scratch. You're starting with an image that might have come from someone else's design background or whatever, but that's not really all that much different than creating a Pinterest board. It's just the computer's done it much faster, right?
Yeah.
So if you're looking at it as like an inspiration tool, that's kind of how I've seen it used a lot in my day job. The way that I use it personally, I have Illustrator, and I will toss a prompt into the Illustrator window asking for a specific vector shape because I'm maybe time crunched or whatever. And I need a good example is I just needed a snowflake shape. Like nobody's going to get offended over a snowflake.
Only snowflakes.
Yeah. It's a sensitive topic here in America right now. so I just needed a snowflake that I could make a pattern out of to put it around a cup to test something out with the laser. Rather than me sit there for, a half hour drawing a vector snowflake, it came up with four different or six different ideas, and then I could build from there. I did learn, you know, how I can get better at asking specifically for what I was looking for. Like, if I need it for the laser, obviously I don't want a lot of tone or gradients or shadows in it. I don't want any background. So I basically just say, you know, all of those things, no background, no gradients, no tonal variation, black and white. And sometimes I'll say coloring book, because a coloring book, it's just like really thick black lines. And then I don't have to go and manipulate and add, you know, thickness to lines, because that's kind of a pain in the ass too. And then I sent it to my laser, and I lasered a mug with all the snowflakes around it as a test. And I was like, yeah, this is great. I also did it for coming up with like generic little logo lockups for my colleagues when I wanted to make mugs for them and laser on them. I didn't want it to cost me a ton of money. I didn't want to go buy clip art. I didn't want to spend a whole lot of time, you know, designing something, but I did want to make something special that was curated specifically to what they liked.
Yeah.
And the prompt just made it really easy. Although it, like, for some reason, Illustrator doesn't really understand when you want it to have words.
Yeah.
When you put quotations around like somebody's name. So my coworkers have unusual names. It's not like John or Maggie.
Ulysses. So
yeah, it's like Ulysses. So so say Yuli, I want just ULI, and I put in quotation marks, and then it gives me ULE or ULEY. And I'm like, well, why is it giving me the wrong name? Like, that should be the easiest part of the entire prompt. I told you exactly what it's supposed to say, but you know, those are the kinks that have to be worked out.
Yeah, we've definitely experienced where if you're trying to create an image, it's almost useless trying to include text within the descriptor for an image. It's actually a lot easier to, as you said, start with an image, get the image the way you want it, and then try and color match a text font to the same thing and work out where you're going to put it in the image. Like logo design and stuff is great as long as the logo doesn't have words in it, because I tried doing it for my new parents.co.uk logo, and it would like replicate the word Terrence six times randomly on it somewhere, or it would, you know, it did all these weird and wonderful things. And we tried it as well in the past for a t-shirt idea. Like this is the other thing, is it's a great, as we said with the text, it's a great starting point. So we had a t-shirt idea that we wanted to do from a blacksmith perspective for Rasmus. And for whatever reason, AI can't draw an anvil to save its life. It doesn't matter which image generator AI it is. It does not understand what an anvil looks like, which is ridiculous, given like that's a relatively standard image. Like you would have thought it would get that.
This is my biggest gripe with AI. It's absolutely zero understanding for anything relating to blacksmithing.
Yeah. Like if we wanted to do one of a potter at a wheel, no problem. It was great. It gets that, like pottery wheel. It's all fine. I think I had an idea of like a goblin wood hoarder one, and it managed to, it drew the goblin great. It had like stacks of timber everywhere. It had planking. It had, you know, it all worked. As soon as you say like lathe, wood turning, any form of complicated machinery, it's probably not going to understand without you writing an exceptionally specific and well-defined prompt for it. And that's fine if you want to put that time into it and everything else. But again, as we said, it's a great launch pad for a concept idea. I mean, I can imagine, Heidi, if I sat there and went, okay, I've got this rough idea in my head. If I went to a graphic designer or an artist or a cartoonist or caricaturist, whatever variant of that, and I said, this is what I want, and I described my idea using words or written text, what would come back? I'd probably still have to go back and go, can you move this? Can you change this?
Right.
Which is a lot more irritating if they've spent 6 hours or something on it, or even just an hour sketching it, rather than if I went to them and said, hey, look, I've generated an AI thing. It's in the style that I want. It's loosely got the placement of things that I want, but what I would like changed are these four key features. Now, if the person's an artist and they like to create from scratch, that's potentially going to be borderline offensive to them. You need to pick the person you're having the conversation with. But I see that as a, hey, look, this is the closest thing I've got to the image in my head. I now just need tweaks. and, you know, redraw the whole thing by all means, but these are the things I want to change.
Yeah.
So it furthers the conversation along at a lesser cost in my head.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, coming from my background and working with certain different types of artists. So like there are production artists that is their job is to take from you, like move this over here, do that, like very direct. This is what I want. And then there's the graphic designers that are I built my career on being a concept artist, on, you know, being the AI for you. And and that's like working with those folks is a whole different realm, because it's almost like they are the AI. When you take stuff to them. Now, I work mainly with production artists who like to take an existing design and manipulate it to fit a specific need, whether it's web use, whether it's going to go on a tiny bottle or a big carton, or it's for an end cap for a store or something, but it's all like, here's the brand equity. I need you to take this brand equity and move it over to this usage. There's people that do that on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And to me, those are the people like that are going to do really well with these types of initiatives when folks like you, or even even marketers bringing their idea boards to the team and saying like, can you do this? It helps to translate things in a visual way.
Yeah.
That to me, maybe I'm naive, but I think that it's going to promote more people to be able to do that work and understand that work and better communicate that work.
Yeah.
I mean.
I think that's the key word though, isn't it? Is the communication point of view. Because so I recently, with trying to get my logo, I spoke to several different people, including a guy who is a woodturner as a hobby, but his day job is graphic design, about would you be interested in doing my logo? And they were all like, and I was like, is this not your job? And one of them said, oh no, I'm more into like, you know, web, whatever it is, which that's fine. I've no problem if they said it's not their job, but one of them, and they weren't from this country, one of them is literally a woodturner and a graphic designer. And I was asking for a logo, and it could not have been more clear that they were not interested in working with me. Now that might've been a personality clash, fair enough. Like, you know, but the fact that it was difficult to find someone for me to give money to, in my head, to do their job from a point of view of someone who has the same hobby as something I'm trying to make a business out of. I thought, well, this is a good fit. You know, you've got some key concepts that understood and whatever. But even then, when I did find a graphic design company that I went to, I went and had a 2-hour conversation with a person. I showed them some examples of the kind of styles of things that I aspired to, but I didn't necessarily like the logos of. I showed them some stuff that I did like. And I showed you guys the first round return from it. And I was like, well, none of that fits at all anything that I'm describing. So I was clearly either not communicating well, and that was fine. You know, we went back and forth. We came up with a couple of things, and I like the end result of what they've come up with. But I think this is the thing. It's like, you know, that was a 2-hour conversation. Then I had to wait a few days for them to generate a thing, which is totally understandable, because that's what happens when you're working with a person. If I had gone out of my way to write the prompt and generate and go, hey, look, here's a couple of designs that I think I'm on this is the vein of what I'm looking for, could you go from there? That might have sped the process up, but I can't be sure.
Yeah.
It's a very tricky thing, but at the end of the day, it's communicating. It is a communication tool that may or may not. If I went in, I'm talking too much again, but if I went into a company and said, hey, look, are you kind of, this is the kind of thing I'm looking for, are you guys interested? And they glanced at what we did and said, oh, that's not the style we do here, you need such and such a company. That's potentially profitable in the sense of you're not going too far down a conversation with people before you realize you're not a good fit.
It's kind of like going to a tattoo artist and expecting them to just like regurgitate something you saw online.
Yeah.
Whereas like, they're like, I draw by hand and this is the style that I draw. That's not what I do, but you can go to this person who excels in that style.
Yeah, I do photorealistic portraits and you want a cartoon bumblebee. This isn't the same thing.
Yeah. So like you have to be mindful. It really comes down to like, what is the quality of work that you want for whatever the end result is. So if you are just using it casually to get copy for you to figure out, like for a one-time use, like blog post.
Yeah.
You can get it straight done out of AI, but if you wanted something that looked super professional and super clean, your starting point can be AI to like really actualize what you're trying to envision. But ultimately, you should hire somebody professionally to refine it.
Yeah.
And they're going to be able to. So right now, AI is only going to be able to take it so far. So we've realized this recently with the merch, right? So, well, you guys haven't because you weren't building the files for the different content that we needed. So if we were looking at t-shirts and we wanted to do our logo on the t-shirt, the number of, or the way you have to build the file so that it works on a black t-shirt versus working on a white t-shirt, you have to prep the file a little bit differently so that the white gets knocked out and you get direct to the fabric versus like you just having a white box around everything.
Yeah.
So like those are the details specifically when you're talking about translating to print or, you know, translating to web, that experts are going to be able to take that AI information and either rebuild it to work in whatever end use you need or multiple end uses. But you're not going to be able to take it direct from whatever. Like I still had to manipulate the snowflakes in a way that would work on the software. I wasn't just like, okay, now go software. There was still work that needed to be done after the illustration was made, is what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing. We are not advocating that you could start up a print t-shirt business by just generating AI images and just uploading them to an easy print-on-demand service without any form of manipulation or whatever. First of all, you know, there's a whole conversation around copyright and where the imagery has been generated from, but there's also the conversation about, like, exactly as Heidi's just described, it's not going to necessarily work the way you want, and then you're going to be having a go at a t-shirt company for your failings for checking a file, all of that kind of stuff. So there's definitely, it's a starting point and it can jump you ahead quite a few steps, but it's not the end goal. It's not the end result. And I can see Rasmus thinking of a scenario he's trying to describe in there.
No, I think I just had a bit of a comparison, and tell me if I'm missing the mark here, but it feels like AI for the most part is a tool just like a CNC for woodworking is. You need to understand the specifics of how it works. It doesn't replace an expert woodworker, but it can do a hell of a lot of things really well if you're able to set it up correctly.
It's not a bad comparison. And I would generally speaking agree with that statement. And I think as well, building on that analogy, it is a tool that different people will use to different levels of ability and will embrace in different ways.
Yeah.
So for me, for instance, if we go down that slight route on CNC, if I owned a CNC machine or a CNC laser, however you wanted to do it, I would very much be the monkey who needs to have the file pre-prepped. I plug it in, I put my piece of wood there, and I have minimal setup to do. I press go, and I can press go 100 times, and it's never going to change. On the other hand, the kind of guys who love building jigs, they've got their table saw, they've got, you know, all of this kind of stuff. And they love spending 2.5 days building a jig to then be able to replicate the same task again and again and again. That's not me. That's a different type of woodworker that leans a lot heavier towards the engineering sphere of it. But they're also the kind of person who would look at a CNC or a CNC laser and go, oh, that opens up a whole host of other possibilities. And they're going to be the ones who are going to be creating the drawing from scratch or manipulating it or multi-layering stuff and building 3D sculpture and all of that kind of thing. So I think it's definitely a good analogy. And I think it's also that point of remembering that not everyone can or will use these tools in the same way. So again, don't compare yourself to others and go, well, that person's using this to a great effect, I should start using that too. Have a look at what else they do, because if everything else they do doesn't really compare to what you're doing, then it's quite possibly not going to have the same impact on your work or your business as the thing might do. I think what we've overall spoken about is the fact it's better for communicating ideas. It's helping us work things through. There is one type of AI that I mentioned before the show and we haven't discussed yet, which is something slightly different. Heidi mentioned about she'll occasionally chat to her AI. because you were working lonely in the shop, and I can imagine some of those conversations can be quite interesting. Those of you who have got Spotify might be aware that they released an AI, and it's an AI DJ who, if you action it and you play it, he will pull songs from your top 10 most listened to or whatever, and then he might suggest other songs that are similar. And that can be quite a refreshing thing in the background, so it's you're not just playing through workshop playlist number one for the 100th time and kind of feeling like it's in a bit monotonous and you're in your little bubble. It can kind of just jog you a little bit and help you feel a little bit less alone. And that might be something worth experiencing a little bit. I've played with it a bit. I don't use it that often. But if you are looking for new sounds and new tunes, that's definitely a tool that would be worth exploring. It might only be on Spotify Premium. I'm not sure because I've got Premium. But if it is, have a play with it, see what it recommends. But yeah, I mean, is there any other particular angles on AI that you guys think have been really, really helpful, or that you think, you know, moments of caution or problems that it might come up with? I know my wife mentioned that there's no point trying to get it to draw images of people because they end up with like six legs.
15 fingers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's actually gotten a lot better in the last few months, maybe 6 months even. I have tried to use it for research, trying to help me write the book and verify things I seem to recall someone said once, or trying to find a source where I can't really recall the specifics, or like actually we just want to find a source for a thing I feel fairly certain is correct, but I haven't had the source in front of me in a decade or something. And it really struggles to give me the information kind of that I want. It doesn't seem to work for research in my case. That might be blacksmithing. That might be also the fact that I have a certain amount of competency inside of blacksmithing, so that any information it gives me, I can easily sort of judge and see, like, is this correct? Is this not? Does this feel right? And also tested it a few times, because every once in a while it's like, oh, I wonder if it's good enough that I can just ask it, how should I harden and temper this bit of steel? And it gives sometimes in the beginning, it told me about the hardening process of you make it hot and you dip it in something cold, and then magic happens. I was like, well, excellent. Not the thing I wanted to know. But more recently, it seems to be closer to actually be able to give me, especially for steel hardening and such, oh, you should be in this temperature range for this amount of minutes, then cool it in water or oil, depending on something, and blah, blah, blah. And for sometimes that feels like it works. I just don't fully trust it yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
The opposite, so like for research things, for detailed description of things where I already have a lot of knowledge, it doesn't feel like it works. But on the other hand, if I'm more like, oh, there was a person who explored something and he found this thing, like that kind of stuff, I can sort of describe the story the way I remember it without any specifics, and the AI can just come back at me with, here's 3-4 possible candidates that vaguely fit your description. Can it be any of these? And then I can go in and do the proper research myself. But that's a whole lot different thing. Then it's just giving me the outline and the words to look your things up properly afterwards. It's not giving me the actual answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I recently, and I've only put the prompt in twice. So put it in once and rewritten it once. And it might have been that I was putting it in the wrong kind of AI anyway. So we've mentioned a few times in the past about skill trees. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly thought this week, because this session was on my mind, and I thought, well, actually, what about asking AI to generate a skill tree for a beginner woodturner? Like literally just go like, you know, and I think I need to find the correct AI to do it, because this is clearly not just a text list. You want it to actually have that tree kind of feel to it. And it was interesting, the response. Like it did give, like, it was very heavy on the health and safety and the kind of, like, you know, wood identification and all of this kind of stuff. And I think I would need to write a much bigger, more comprehensive prompt and make it clearer. But there's definitely something on the path there to figure things out and give it a nudge to potentially generate almost like a, right, I am currently at X level of my profession, my craft. What would be 3 good projects to develop this skill set that I already have? So list your current skill set. What would be a good development area? You know, maybe you make things in the style of X craftsperson or whatever. So there's a whole conversation there of like, how would you move things forwards? So it's not just inspiration for a description or an image. It's like, okay, I feel like I'm stuck in a rut. there's nothing I'm seeing around me that's helping me creatively. Give me three things. Give me three projects and indicators of where I can look to see examples of this product. So that's not necessarily like directly the skill tree, but it's kind of that developmental kind of nudge that might be helpful. So that would definitely be an interesting exercise. But as I say, it's how much time and effort do you put into writing the prompt to say, oh, I'm currently at this level. I have experience in doing da 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 da. And these are the people who inspire me and everything else. What would be a recommended next thing? And it's the more I use AI, the more impressed I am by things like the AI image that won the art award a year or two ago that everyone's up in arms about, understandably so. There's a whole background as to why that was the case, because if people have truly sat there and written the prompt to generate that, and that was an intended image, there's an awful lot of work into the construction of that prompt to get that image result in exactly the way that you want. Because and you know, bear in mind that was 2 or 3 years ago, so the power of the AIs and the abilities of them has changed massively. So, and you know, in summary, it's a much better tool to communicate things. It's a much better tool to help you along, kind of, whether that's dealing with Excel metrics, whether that's dealing with, you know, summaries in for your products or for your blog posts or for your images, just inspiration or moving stuff along. But it is a tool, and if you learn how to use it well, it can help you. If it just stresses you out, you don't have to use it. Like, I don't own a Festool Domino. I don't have to spend the time and effort on that. Go on, Raz.
I'm realizing also I've used AI a fair bit to troubleshoot technical problems, whether that is just on my computer or if it's a printer that doesn't work or whatever. It's often enough there's someone else have had that problem. And instead of you trying to sift through and find like the right forum post or Reddit post or something, asking the AI can quickly give you the correct answer if you're describing what you're trying to do. Or like you're mentioning with Excel, I've used that a lot for a lot of other programs as well. Like, I'm trying to do this thing in this program. Is that possible? Mm-hmm. Or what's the shortcut to do this thing in this program? Very often the AI can just quickly give you the answer because it's kind of easily accessible. You just need to find the right web page for it.
Interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. And I'm now going to throw one back at you, Raz, that you're going to hate me for. Have you yet asked it how to speed run through any of the computer games you're currently playing?
No, I'm not. I have been tempted to... yesterday, actually, I was tempted to ask it about this furnace golem in Elden Ring DLC. But then I realized...
I knew there'd be a link there somewhere to Elden
Ring. Yeah, because yesterday I met a big bastard on fire that I couldn't damage. And I was like, well, how the fuck do I deal with this guy? But I just looked the guy up directly because I kind of knew the webpage I was looking for and how sort of where the reliable information were. But yeah, I was this close yesterday.
it would be worth mentioning on that, not specifically on computer games, but steering back to it. It's the kind of thing where, you know, when you blindly Google markets in my area or something like that for places to sell my product and all of that kind of stuff. If you use Google in that way, and you're aware when you use Google in that way that that's a starting point, and you need to refine down the answers you're going to get, it's the same kind of process. You can't blame a digital tool and say it doesn't give me the answer I want. It will only give you the answer based on the information you've given it. So if you tell it I want a black and white vector image, you can't be upset when it doesn't give you a black and white vector image of a dog. Because you haven't asked it that you want a black and white vector image of a dog. You've just said a black and white vector image. So it is very important that you put as much information in the prompt as possible to get it closer to giving you the response that you want. That might sound blindingly obvious to a lot of people, but hopefully that's helpful to one or two of you who, like me, might be slightly more technologically challenged and are need that little bit of a nudge in the right direction.
Yeah, it's a lot like not being a passive aggressive asshole to your spouse because you think they should read your mind about what you want.
I think that myself and the other male in this team are going to take the fifth on that comment.
Oh yeah.
I'm the passive aggressive one in this situation.
I would not have ever dreamed that idea. I couldn't possibly agree with that being anything like anyone at all.
Right. I it does look like Ben has reached out about chocolates from our chocolate friend. So the non-passive aggressive of adding him when Ronnie put up that she was taking pre-orders, I think it worked.
Nice.
Oh.
Chocolates.
I'm just trying to work out if there's any way that we can get her to do merch chocolates for us. I can't think of a way of it happening.
You just
easily.
Want chocolate as a write-off on the business.
I don't know that she's ever shipped anything internationally yet.
No, well, I'm yeah, because obviously there's a time scale and all of that kind of good stuff. But I am going to be in the States in November.
October,
November, around that time.
Yeah.
We'll wait and see. This is a big reveal that we haven't revealed yet, but we'll worry about that nearer the time. I'm distracted by chocolate now. Absolutely. And Ronnie, I hope you're still listening to episodes and you're excited that we're distracted by your chocolate.
Yes, so beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm also glad that Ben's taken up that hint of you just adding him on all of hers. Oh, look, pre-orders for chocolate.
Look at this. Looky here. There's a fun little thread of them going back and forth. He's like, she doesn't think that it was obvious. Point received.
Excellent. Absolutely excellent. What you don't notice is it's just for him and Carver. He's not buying you any chocolates at
all. Oh my God, I would cry. Her chocolates are so good. They're chocolates that you like really only eat maybe half one because they're just
what
so good.
Are those?
You don't wanna eat them all at once. Well, you do want to eat them all at once, but you wanna have them last forever.
You just buy five and just like bolt the first three and go, right, okay.
True. They are works of art.
Yeah. Well, excellent, guys. It's been good to talk to you as always. I can't think of anything else we particularly want or need to cover on this subject, but I'm sure our listeners will have an opinion or an angle on this. If you do, please talk to us about it. We prefer it publicly through social media. Always helps to have the algorithm chatting back and forth. So you can do that when I post about this episode on our Instagram page. That's at setting_up_shop, SHOPPE. And then you can also email us. So that's info@settingupshop.com. Or you can speak to us individually. So I can be found at tarrants.co.uk. Heidi can be found at Whitehall Pottery. And Rasmus can be found at Rasmus Lowen. And I think that covers everything. If you do like this episode, if you're enjoying the podcast overall, the two things that you can do for us that will help that are free for you to do. First one is leave a rating on whatever app you're listening on, whether it's Apple, Spotify, whatever. And the second one is tell a like-minded friend or three about us and explain to them how much they would enjoy listening to our voices and the conversations that we have. And help us to grow our listenership that way. If you're thinking that you like it enough that you want to throw a little bit of cash our way, always appreciated, but not required. And this is, we do a lot of this for the love and for the holding each other accountable. We do currently have a Patreon account and we are intending releasing more content on there this year. And then finally, we will be doing a launch of a merch web shop. We are working on that, as Heidi mentioned earlier. We have some basic designs, but we want to also have some fun designs for you guys as well. And the official launch of that will be announced when it's close to the time. Any other things, guys, please feel to reach out. Please feel free to message us ideas, things you want us to talk about. We appreciate you all for listening. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye. See you.